fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Turn your tax refund into a new kitchen with Menards. Make this the year you check that project off the list. Renovate your space with new cabinets from Cardell. They're ready to install and come in a variety of styles and finishes with free shipping to your home. Visit our kitchen showrooms in-store or go to Menards.com for free estimates today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for all of our hot deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Sip and Chat. This is going to be a great episode, but before we get to that, how's everybody doing?
Gucci, how you doing?
Randy, how you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good.
You got to talk into the mic, Randy.
I'm good, man. I guess I was supposed to be doing all this, but yeah, I'm good. I'm great.
He woke you up this morning.
I just said I'm thankful that I'm grateful. I am.
So, as always, we're starting where we left off again. Randy's being Randy. Carlos is working the board. It's always good to have you fellas in. But we got some special guests, some special, special guests in here. We have my brother, Daryl Hinton, here. We have Miss Denise Swapshire, his mother, and the beautiful Tamika Benning Hinton, his wife. How y'all doing today?
Pretty good. How you doing, man?
We're good.
Good. So, yeah, you got to talk into the mic. So usually we do, you know, we go around and we'll thank our sponsors later. But this is one of those episodes we definitely want to dive into. For those in the area that know Daryl and his story and, you know, heart transplant, you know, that was a journey. And we're going on year, what, three?
Yeah, it's three, right?
Yeah, 3 years.
Yeah, 3 years is 36,000 miles.
Yeah,
that's all I changed. You know, they do the BMWs at 10,000 now.
So yeah, year three, man.
Yeah, so this episode, you know, of course, health, but it's also appreciation to second chance at life too. Yes. So we definitely want to hear his story and his family too, because, you know, he wouldn't have made it through without his family and the support from them. So, but it's always good to be here. And y'all know Daryl, he sat in on a couple episodes with us, and he'll be back for a few more episodes, man. You glad to be back?
Yeah, man, I appreciate it. Thank y'all again for having me and my family here, and just excited about it.
Yeah. So this is, which he should have said in the beginning, in reference to March Health Awareness.
Oh, can I pause for a minute on that? Oh, somebody already done Googled and checked it. That is not.
No, you said it was men's health. I said it's not men's health. Yeah, he said health awareness.
See, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, we might need to take off.
Yeah, Randy's already. And see, Randy, he's starting already, man, correcting me. My bad. Health awareness. My bad, Randy. My bad. So just to jump into it, again, it's going on year three. This will be year four. December 14th will be 4 years. Mm-hmm. But talk us through before, you know, like what was the lifestyle before? What were you doing before?
Before the transplant.
Yeah, just like how was life before the transplant?
You know, I'm always an overthinker, so I overthink a lot. So it was, you know, just everyday life, working, two jobs, things of that nature.
Yeah.
Doing my regular health checkups, trying to work out, things of that nature, trying to get my mind right because I overthink, you know. You know, y'all, you know, I had a conversation before with Carlos and Damien before, and just going on with life until I came back from D.C., I think. And then I caught bronchitis. I kept coughing. I thought, well, I just got bad allergies again because I know I already do.
Yeah.
But I started feeling horrible. So I went to the doctor or whatever. So it says it's bronchitis. I'm like, all right, cool. And then that's when it took off.
Yeah. So as far as just doing the right things, eating right, working out, you know, everything that we're told to do, mm-hmm. you know, and Mimi, my beautiful sister here, and you better not say nothing, D. How was life like before before all of this transpired?
Tread lightly.
Tread lightly. I mean, everything was good. Like Darren said, we were just living life normal.
Yeah.
Like any other family, any other couple. And then boom, we get hit with everything all at once.
So I guess D, just kind of walk us through that.
So of course I came back from DC taking Layla to school. Just thought of my allergies just kicking my butt like normal. And it started progressing to get worse. And I was like, oh, that ain't right. Scared to lay down at night. I started coughing. I mean, I'm coughing bad. And then, my mom's like, what's wrong with you, boy? I was like, you know, I'm okay. Just my allergies. So finally I went to the doctor and they said I had bronchitis. So I was like, cool. They started giving me all the allergy medicines, all the antibiotics and all that. It didn't get better. And so I was like, something ain't right. But I paid some attention, but I was like, okay, maybe let the medicine kick in.
Yeah.
So about another, what you say, maybe about 3 weeks later, mm-hmm. it got worse. So I started going to the emergency room. And every time I went to the emergency room, they'll send me back home. So I started going to allergy doctors. They're giving me albuterol treatments. I'm getting bigger and bigger as far as weight-wise. I'm like, what's going on? So by this time, I stopped eating. And then I stopped wanting to take baths. Yeah, I won't stop taking showers because the steam from the shower would take my breath away, and it put me into goes back to my overthinking, like survival mode. So I would stick my head out the curtain, take a shower real quick, and get out. But I'll feel good for about a good 30 minutes after that. So I was like, well, maybe it is my allergies. So I went to the emergency room another time, same ordeal. So this last time, I was feeling horrible, man. I still would come to work, though. By this time, I'm throwing up in the morning, I'm throwing up blood every morning, but I still would come to the fire hall. By this time, I got promoted. My new job. So, you know, I was scared about that because we all know, whatever. And this last particular time, I sat on the couch, and I think that's when I said something to Mimi, and she looked back. I remember it like it was yesterday. She looked back at me, and she like, uh-uh. And she called my mama. Of course, I don't know why all black women, black mamas, put them in the shower. I'm thinking, I'm damn near dead. I can't breathe. What you want to put me back in the shower? So by this time, you know, they put me in the shower. I couldn't even hold up the rag because I was so weak. And Mimi had to wash me up, you know. And then by this time, here come mama coming. They got me in the car. I didn't know.
I think I dressed.
She dressed me.
I think I dressed you.
She dressed me, Carlo. She dressed me. And okay. And but I went before that though was crazy. That was in November. Prior to that, like the first couple of weeks in November, I would go to my mom's house because Mimi, they would treat me like I was a. Daycare, they would send me to mama house, and I would sit on the couch so she can watch me. It was the craziest thing, but I'm so thankful for. I'm telling you, thankful is heck for that. So mama would get mad if I didn't eat. Mimi, you know, they'd get all kind of mad. I mean, it was crazy, and I would throw up every morning. You know, my anxiety kick in. I have the world's worst anxiety. Like I know I look cool and smile a lot, but my anxiety is through the roof 24/7. So, of course, they had a conversation with me, man. They set me down, you know, because at this point, they don't know what's going on with me. They just think I'm sick, and Daryl, you know how Daryl is over things. And they was like, Daryl, you know, we're going to get you some help, you know.
So,
I looked at them, I said, what you mean, help? Yeah. Basically, want to tell, hey, if you don't get this together, we're going to admit you. And I was like, ain't nothing wrong with me. So, fast forward again, go back to the on sitting on the couch, and Mimi said what she said, and I went. Mama came and took me to the hospital, and I could barely breathe. Yeah. I could barely breathe. That's the worst feeling in the world, man. Can't breathe. Like, it's almost like I'm drowning. I get in there, and I was laying on the table, going in and out. My mom was sitting there. Mimi was coming in from the car, whatever. And I just remember me dozing off, waking back up, and two younger doctors, they said, Daryl, we're going to have to admit you because your organs are failing.
No, you missed a step.
So I missed a step. So yeah, we're gonna let Denise proceed.
Yeah. Mom. Yeah. So Miss Denise, let me ask you something. So because mothers know their kids, you know they know when they're sick. They know when they're fake sick. You know, yeah. Like how did you process this during this time?
Well, it was hard because when a few years before that he had cancer, and then he was diagnosed with congestive heart failure. So
then I had to get him. Defibrillator.
Yeah, he had a defibrillator. So when he I would call like I do every day, check on him. But Mimi was the one who kept me informed of what was going on with him. So that particular day I came to the house to get Daryl, I was like, I had come earlier that day just to check on him, see how he was doing, and he wouldn't eat. He wouldn't eat nothing, and then, he looked like he was sick, but again, Daryl has anxiety. So we thought maybe, his anxiety was making him throw up, making him not want to eat, but I knew something was wrong with him, but we just couldn't figure out what it was because he'd been to the emergency room I don't know how many times, and then everybody kept saying he was fine. So then at that point, we did think it was in his head, so his anxiety. So that last day, I went up there earlier that day, and Mimi called me back and said, Miss Denise, we ain't going to have to take him back to the hospital. So I went up there and I got him and I took him back to the hospital. So we at the hospital we won't name and won't go back to. I get him in there and the little lady checks him out. She says, we're going to get him back right away because it was, people had COVID and everything. So we get back there.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
You're listening to a podcast right now, driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.
And the doctor says, well, we ran all these tests and we gave him Bruderol and nothing's wrong. We just sent him home. I said, no, we're not sending him home. I said, he's been out here 3-4 times and you keep sending him home. He's not going home. And she says to me, we can't keep him because you just want us to keep him. I said, no, you're keeping him. He ain't going home. I know my rights. You're going to have to call somebody to make us go. So she decided she's going to go get 2 other doctors to come in. And they ran some tests, and then that's when they realized that his organs was failing. But if I hadn't spoke up, she would have sent Daryl home, and Daryl wouldn't have made it. Yeah. He would not have made it. Because that night, Mimi came back out there to the hospital, but I knew she was tired. So I was like, go home, Mimi. I got it. I'll be here, So they finally put him in a room, in the emergency room, not on the floor, but in the emergency room. And this one particular nurse, and I knew her from working at another store, she was the only nurse that came in there and said, okay, listen, this is what you're going to have to do. Because every time Daryl would stop breathing, the machine would beep, 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 beep. This boy went, I was literally up 24/7. I did not go to sleep because I had to keep him alive. Mm-hmm. I pinched this boy. I pulled his hair. Everything I can do for 24 hours to keep him alive because she said every time that machine go off, that means he's not breathing. So I would pinch him, I pull his hair, I just pray, I shook him, but nobody would ever come back in there to check on us. Even the machine was beeping, but the machine would stop beeping when I got him awake. So I did that from that night to the next morning before they put him in a room. But like I said, you have to be an advocate when you go to those places, because being a black person, I don't care. They're not going to take us as serious as the next person.
Yeah.
So looking at Daryl, I knew this was my child. She wasn't going to throw me out. She was not going to throw me out of that hospital. And then a few days later, he was kind of stable, when you say. And then one particular doctor come in from the Heart Institute, and he said, oh, no.
Oh, well, so he came. He was admitted to the floor, and he was kind of stable. I think he was having visitors, and he was a little bit okay. He still wasn't back to Daryl. And one particular night, I remember it was on a Wednesday, because I think they transferred us to another hospital the following day. Mm-hmm. But that particular night, Daryl is Daryl, and Daryl doesn't want anybody to do anything for him. So he wanted to go to the bathroom, and of course, Daryl wanted to walk. And I'm like, oh my gosh, okay. So it's Daryl and I, that's it. So Daryl wants to get up, and when he gets up, he wants to just speed walk. But I'm like, you got all these... Like, you hooked to monitors, you hooked to, like, IV machines. You can't speed walk. Like, Daryl, you need to slow down. Well, Daryl is speed walking. And, like, all of a sudden, I could just feel him just go down. But we made it to, like, the entrance of the bathroom door, and he just falls, and I just scream. And at that time, the nurse came rushing in, and then everybody called Code Blue. And I'm just like, oh, my gosh, like, I don't know what to do. So they rush me out of the room, and they sit me at the nurse's station, and everyone comes in, and they're working on Daryl. But I remember before I walked out, they started giving him, like, the sternum rub. And he was like, why y'all doing all that? I'm okay. He was like, I'm fine. Don't do that. I'm okay. So they get him back up while I was out of the room and get him back in the bed. And it was like, well, from this point on, and I think they kind of – chastised the nurse for allowing him to get out of the bed. So they put him back in the bed, and it's like from this point on, he can't get up. And then it was the next day that we received news that he was in a lot worse shape, but they still didn't tell us that. They're just like, he's really sick, and we're going to have to transfer him down somewhere else. And that when he gets there, he'll be in the ICU, and that it'll be a moment before you guys can see him. And I was like, okay. So that's how the transition started from that point.
So, and this is for any of you three, finding that out, you know, that, hey, we're going to have to move him somewhere else, you know, like, how did that impact, you know, you guys?
I think it was scary. We still didn't know, because I think they said he was sick, but nobody was saying how sick he was. Like, it wasn't until we really got transferred that we found out how sick he was. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't know, but I will tell you this. I had never seen nurses cry. And I had nurses at that hospital before he was transferred that day in the hallway with me. And they were crying. They were praying, but they were crying. And I was like, these people don't even know him.
Yeah.
And they were just so emotional. But again, I guess it still didn't dawn on me that he was as sick as he was until we were transferred. And then he gets to ICU and he's hooked up, and then they're really telling us, like, oh, this is what it really is. So in the beginning, I'm still, like, trying to figure it out. But then reality really set in once we were transferred.
Yeah. So, Dee, during, because you were sick for, like, some months before you even got there, you know, walk us through how, you know, mentally it affected you when you, you know, just kind of starting hearing this information.
Going through the whole process when I was sick, I didn't really, oh, it's kind of crazy, because on one side I felt like I'm going to be okay, but then on the other side I was like, wait a minute, you feel right, I know you don't, but you know better than that. But also I was just worried about, you know, me, the kid, my mom and him, you know, me, mom.
Talking to the mic, Daryl.
I was just worried
good
about
good grief.
I was worried about, God, I'm like, it's supposed to be, Randy, you're supposed to help me out.
It's always Randy's fault.
Yeah, Randy, my boy, yes. Randy going. And so, I, you know, I was just thinking. Yeah. Loosen them up, Randy. Loosen them up. Not too loose, though, Randy. Too loose. Yeah. I felt like crap, man. But I was just worried about, you know, me, the girls, my mom would say, you know, me, mom, my job, because I was just so focused about going to work every day, you know. And I know that's strange to say, but I was worried about going to work, you know, because I was in a new role and just didn't want no miscommunication with that. But steady, you know, going, doing what I got to do, even the two guys who I was with, three guys I was with, they know who I was with at the time. They would take care of me, you know, but they still was thinking like, man, what's wrong with her, man? Yeah. Scooting when he walked. Or I couldn't even go up a flight of steps, you know, without breathing hard. It's like, something ain't right. But still, I'm brushing it off because I'm thinking it'll get better. But that was one of the worst feelings you can have in the world, man, not be able to breathe and not know why you can't breathe.
Yeah.
It was just so strange. And then when I, you know, started getting diagnosed with things, I really still didn't process it because I was still worried about, you know, about me now, my mom. You know.
And I think the hardest part for us, too, was that we were taking him to all these specialists. He was going to the doctor, mm-hmm. and everybody was saying he was okay. It's bronchitis, it's this, it's asthma. It's not what we thought it was. Mm-hmm. And he had a cardiologist, and we went to the cardiologist like twice. And still, we weren't told that his heart is, like, pumping at this rate. Like, it's...
It was at the end result, it was 15% ejection fraction.
Yeah.
I don't know if you... I'm not trying to insult nobody. Ejection fraction is the amount of how your heart pumps. Okay. The volume, whatever. And mine was at 15%. And I didn't know until, probably like, last year, year before last, me and Mimi was talking, and I didn't know... That time I had kidney and liver failure, I had sepsis, and I had 15% ejection fraction. I was all at the same time.
I think the hardest thing for me was seeing all those tubes in you when they were putting all those needles. I mean, there was not a place on his body. I never seen so many machines hooked up to one person. And Daryl's my only child.
Yeah.
And we really close. And it's almost like I was feeling what he was feeling because I didn't know how to process it either, but I was thankful. I mean, I like to give Mimi her flowers
because
she stood by this boy through thick and thin. She was worried, but the good thing about me and Mimi, we communicate. Yeah. Even if we talk about Daryl, we still communicate
in
a bad way.
They was doing it on the way here, y'all.
In so my face. We communicate very well.
That ain't cool. I don't care what y'all say. Excuse my friend. That shit ain't cool.
To say that all these other people who played parts in getting Daryl's help.
Yeah.
I mean, all those people at Memorial, his fire people he worked with in the department, you know, just all these things came together. Okay. It all came together. So, but just, you know, having all this support was the best thing. And I think that's what helped Daryl receive his heart because they seen the love and all the people who care for him. It pushed him up a little bit on the list because it's important to have family
and support.
They won't give it to you. We learned a lot of stuff about transplants that, you know, I never would. You know, even the size of the heart, who gets the heart, you know, the heart can't be no older than what 33-year-old heart from a person. Daryl's weight have to match up with the heart size.
My height.
His height, everything have to match up in order to get a heart.
So let me ask, when you heard this, and you heard it here before you left to go to Nashville, that he needs a heart transplant. Like, D, how did that sink in for you?
Well, to be honest, D, I didn't really know what was going on. When I went to the other hospital, the main hospital, I remember like it was yesterday, the doctor that came in, he kneeled down to me. He said, I'm going to treat you like I would treat my dad and my uncle. When I say that hit me, that's all I heard.
Yeah.
That meant the world to me to this day. That was real touching to me, man. And so I was going in and out of conscious, really. And I didn't know really nothing about it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, another person made a couple of phone calls for me, too. And then this other nurse came down. She said, we're going to get you out of here tonight, Daryl. I was like, okay. By this time, I don't know nothing. I'm just like, oh, okay, whatever. I got IVs everywhere in my neck. I got IVs on my arm. I had blood clots. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. That was one reason why I was feeling bad, too, because I had a blood clot behind my defibrillator. It was making me sick.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say, too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at RSS.com.
You're listening to a podcast right now, driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, Starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at rss.com.
I had blood because of my leg, my defibrillator, and my arm.
But they didn't find that out until afterwards.
So, next thing I know, they said, we're going to move you. I said, oh, okay, cool. So they brought in a critical care nurse to ride with me on the ambulance. That was I wish I could meet the two paramedic guys. They're the two countries, white guys there, but they were so cool and so funny. And that ride from here to Nashville was the smoothest ride. It was raining, too, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it was raining.
Because they was going to airlift me, right? But I got stable for some strange reason.
Yeah.
I got stable out of all of that. And they transported me in the ambulance. So that first night I got in, I remember coming, because my memory's vague on that, y'all, so kind of bear with me. I remember going through the door, and the guy was in the front of me in the stretcher, and they were just rushing me down the hall. And then they got me in the room, and I went to sleep. And next thing I know, I woke up, and I think I seen you first, and I seen Mom. And then Mimi looked at me, whatever. And then by that time, I think I went back to sleep. And then the next morning, that's when the doctor came in. If you don't, I know y'all probably don't know about Vanderbilt, but Vanderbilt, it's like ants. They come in like a team of
Daryl had at one point it was 24 doctors.
Yeah. Wow.
At one time. They come in every day and they stand outside, they discuss his case, and then they come back and let us know. We were informed. They informed us a lot.
They communicated.
It was like the best experience. If you have to go through that kind of experience, it was the best experience because these people genuinely cared. And Daryl's a sweet talker too. He can smooth talk anybody. And they fell in love with Daryl.
I think that's right, Mimi.
They fell in love with him. So they would come in every day, you know, he's dapping him up, this, that, and the other. And he made some really good friends. And just some of the nice things that they said about him to us, you know. But Mimi, this girl wouldn't leave his side. I mean, at times when she wasn't feeling well, she wouldn't leave. Yeah. So, you know, I always wanted to make it clear. I'm the mama. She's the wife. She comes first.
Mm-hmm.
Everything, you go through her first. So even if she wasn't there, I always made sure Mimi was informed because that's his wife. I'm the low man on the totem pole. And that's okay because, you know, I love my daughter-in-law.
Yeah.
And I'm thankful that I have a relationship with my daughter-in-law that we can communicate, you know. So
Big Sis, how did you, when you found out that hey, he needs a transplant. How did you process that? A heart transplant at that, not just, you know.
So it was a lot to process. I mean, I think it hit me before after they told me he's going to have to be transferred to Vandy, if I could say that. Like, the emotions took over while we were still here in Chattanooga. And, I mean, it was a lot. I was like, I don't know what to do. Like, I don't know how this is going to turn out. Like, I know, you know, from hearing stories, people are on the transplant list forever.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, we hadn't made it there, so I didn't get to hear their story yet about how quick soon and how quick the turnaround would be. But I'm thinking, oh, my God, this could take years. Like, what are we going to do?
And not only that, so you got one daughter that's finna graduate, another daughter that's at Howard University.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, how do I tell them? Because, like, the entire time, Layla, we kept in the dark. Because Layla is a very emotional child. She had her challenges at Howard with COVID and like being isolated in the dorms.
But she like her daddy though.
Yeah, she just like her dad. So it's like she had mold in the building. Like, I mean, she had a lot going on.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, I can't tell her. So we were keeping it from her. Maya, I told because she was more local. She was in Murfreesboro. So I was like, okay, I can tell Maya. But Layla didn't really know anything until I think I let her get through her finals.
Mm-hmm.
And fly to Chattanooga, and then she was driven to Nashville to find out what was going on.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was emotions were everywhere. Because I'm like, how do we navigate through this process?
And
we don't know what it's going to look like.
Yeah, but the best thing is that Mimi's job, she was able to work from, you know, from anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And my job, because at the time I was working, and she was really flexible. Because I always said that when Daryl went to the emergency room, and when they decided to send him. You know, transfer him. I kept saying that I'm not coming home to Daryl come home, because when Daryl was born, I had to leave him at the hospital for almost 3 weeks because he had
yellow jaundice.
So, you know, they back then they put you up on a light and I wasn't able to bring him home. So that bothered me.
Yeah.
And I always remember that feeling
they
that
put,
I
they
had.
They put him on extra crispy though, didn't they?
Cornstarch, baby.
So I was able to stay for about a month, I guess. Yeah, yeah. I was up there about a month. But it was one of the hardest time of our lives to go through. But the best thing is that on December the 13th, I woke up and it was my mom's first year of her anniversary of her death. So I was dealing with that too because I was close to my mom. And then that's the same day we found out that Daryl received a heart.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, the gods and my mom's up there looking out for us because that was quick for Daryl to get a heart that fast.
Yeah.
But it was just like, you know, but you always have to think somebody else had to die in order for Daryl to receive this heart. And I'm thankful for that person who signed in that donor thing, but I'm also grieving for that family as well.
Yeah.
That gave my child a second chance in life. Mm. So, you know, and to let's try and finish this up. But Daryl has a totally different child than he was before this transplant. He's more active. He's out. Before, Daryl was just a homebody. You can go. I give you the money to go. I don't want to go. But now he gone. He gone. And that makes me happy that he's living his life to the fullest, that somebody else gave up their life. And I want him to live his life to the fullest because he has a second chance. And he's doing that now that they're empty nesters and what kind of sort of. But it's kind of nice to see them enjoying life a little bit more than it was before he had this whole thing.
Yeah,
I'm trying.
So when you got that call, when they said, hey, we have a heart for you, how was the emotions?
Let me back up. I was going to say, he didn't even really know. So it's a whole process.
Hold on, let me tell my part. Then, because it'll make more sense.
Hey, man.
I was going to talk about before you get to the...
Yeah. Go ahead, Mimi.
So, I was just going to... Okay, knock if you want. So, before, it's a whole process of learning if you're going to be listed. Yeah. And so we went through that process. I think they told us that, again, they were really surprised by the support, that Daryl had. Like, from all of you guys to just, he has so much support. So they was like, we want to get him listed. Like, he has the support. You're here every day. We've never had an ICU room where there's people in and out of here all day, sitting all day. Like, this, he just has so much support. And then the fact that also the next morning when they did their rounds after Daryl had been transferred, they were, the doctor was like, I can't believe you're sitting up here talking to me. He was like, I'm looking at this paper, and I'm looking at you, and I'm looking at this paper, and I'm looking at you, and there's no way you're sitting up in this bed talking to me. He was like, you shouldn't be talking right about now. Mm-hmm. So, again, God is good. But he, they had this process about being listed, and so we went through this process. It was a series of tests, and then we had to fill out forms and all this stuff. And so they told us that they would have these emergency meetings. They would have these meetings every Thursday, I think, or Friday. Mm-hmm. The whole team would get together. They would have your profile, and then the team would decide if you could be listed. And so the first time they got together, they did an emergency because these doctors liked him so much, they had an emergency meeting. But I think someone on there wanted him to have two additional tests, and so he didn't get listed. And then they was like, well, we're meeting again. We're calling another emergency meeting. So they called another emergency meeting, and they was like, we'll let you know. Well, I left the hospital, and I went somewhere, and I got a call, and I was like, oh, this Vandy. So every time I would just see their number, I would answer. I was like, this is, you know, I was like, hello. And she was like, well, this is so-and-so from the insurance department. And she was like, we're calling to make sure you're Blue Cross. And I was like, okay. And I was like, well, why are you calling? She's like, well, you don't know he's been listed. And I was like, oh. So I was like, I called Daryl. I hung her up and I was like, okay, thank you so much. I called Daryl and I was like, what are you doing? And he was like, nothing. I don't know if I called you.
You called me.
And I was like, what are y'all doing? She was like, nothing. I said, are the doctors in there? She was like, no. And I was like, she was like, they're standing outside.
Yeah, because I think at that time y'all was up there. And then it was like Mimi had told me, and I was so excited that I was thinking, I'm just going. And so I told her, but I was thinking at the same time, I was like, Damn, I shouldn't have said anything. I should let Mimi do it. Yeah. But I was so excited, and y'all was there that day. And
but I think they came in eventually and told him he was listed. So that was like the first step of him getting placed on the list. And then they told us, like, once you're placed on the list, they was like, we'll have your heart within 24 hours. And we was like, what? And they was like, we don't have your heart by within 24 hours. It'll be 72 hours. At the latest, it's going to be 72 hours. And so I was like, what? Are they serious? Like, really? Like, this is not the way it goes. And I was like, yeah, we're serious. Yeah. We'll have a heart within 24, 72 hours at the latest. And so then you can talk about your.
So prior to that, that's when I was laying in the bed. They first put a balloon in my groin to see if my heart would open up enough blood flow. And I had to stay still for 24 hours. So that was December the 2nd? No,
December 2nd.
December 2nd. Mm-hmm. So I stayed.
That would have been like they, because you were transferred on the
you know, they did that first step of, they had to do those two things before they would actually give him the heart.
So they gave me the balloon in my groin, and then they came back and said that wasn't feasible. So that's when they put the impeller in my chest. That's when they said.
It was like the impeller could only stay
14 days.
Total 14 days. And I'm like, well, what happens in 14 days? And they were like, well, we'll have a heart by then. I'm like, but what happens in 14 days if you don't find a heart, because he has his impeller in his chest.
Well, that's when I put you on the speakerphone because they came in, they wanted to give him an artificial heart that's on the outside. And Darryl was like, no, you got to let me go. I'm not doing that. You just going to have to let me go, Mama. And I was like, okay. But yeah, he didn't want that because that was a big deal too. Mm-hmm. The big old can sitting on the outside.
It was the L band.
Yeah, so he was like, no, Mama, you got to let me go. I was like, no, we ain't
letting you go. Because I knew, the whole time, I know I'm in this situation, but to me, it was bigger than me, and I feel like to this day, because I was worried about them. It's the hardest part in the world is for you to love somebody, and you can't do nothing for them. It'd be different if you can say, Carlos, come pick up Darryl at the floor. D, come and help Darryl take him to. But I'm here in this stationary place, and there's nothing you can do for me. So I'm worried about their well-being and their thought process, because I know how they think. And I know Mimi don't like gruesome stuff. And I didn't want to torture her with that, And I told my mom, I don't want that. And by this time it started kicking in to me like, Darryl, this might be really serious, boy, because I'm not even thinking about dying. It's crazy. I was thinking about dying more prior to the heart transplant every day. My mental health, my anxiety, than I was actually knowing I'm gravely ill, man. But that part right there was like the toughest part for me. I ain't never told them that. Just seeing them like that, because I love my family so much, man, like to the fullest. And again, I want to, thank my wife, Mimi, and thank you, Mama, both of y'all, because I wouldn't be here if it weren't for God putting them in the situation they was in to defend me and protect me.
And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that Mimi, we both have had health issues, so we recognize what's right and what's wrong when it comes to health.
Yeah,
exactly. So I think that's the whole thing, because I have heart issues myself. I have a pacemaker, and my first pacemaker was like in 1992, and I'm on my 12th one now. So it's like, I know that routine of doing everything, but the whole thing with Darryl, a lot of it, Darryl was just not aware. He was, he was here with us, talking to us, but he was just not aware. He was just, it's almost like mental illness had really set in with him at that point in time when he was going through all of that. But he was still worrying about us. And that's just Darryl. He gonna worry about his mama. He gonna worry about his children. He gonna worry about everybody but himself. Yeah. And that's just who he is. But we got through it, though. We got through it. But I will have to say it's the hardest thing I have had to ever experience in my life. Not even dealing with my mama's sickness, but this right here, because he's my child.
Now, I will argue, because I met Darryl, early 2000s?
Yeah, probably like
Brandon Rowe, early 2000s.
03, 04,
yeah,
something
yeah,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And I will argue that the mental illness has always been there. Yeah.
Very paranoid.
The hell with you, Carlos.
It's probably good that he doesn't recall half of the things
too,
he went through.
Yeah, it is.
He's
really
so
is.
Paranoid.
Yeah, he sure
yeah,
is.
Yeah, I
paranoid.
Am. I'm very paranoid. Yeah.
I always tell Mimi, I don't know what I did. Mimi, it's my
he's
fault.
So paranoid.
Yeah, I am. I'm very paranoid.
He had to come overcome a lot of that, though.
Yeah, he has. He's done much better.
I did, man. This process, just really showed me, which I knew what true love was about anyway, but true love, man, and real support, you know? Again, I can't thank Mimi enough. I should tell her all the time in the room, thank you. She'd be like, what you thank me for? I said, well, you just don't know. And then, you know, I would tell my mom, thank you, because, you know, a lot of people in this world don't have that, man. Right. They don't have the support that I had. I was blessed to have the support.
And so, Daryl's a little spoiled, too.
I can't be at times, they say.
He's spoiled.
Hold on, audience. Rub his feet. When I say spoiled, ain't nobody paying my bills right. Ain't nobody borrow $20 from mama, nothing like that. If I say, mama, can you bake me a cake here and there?
Yeah, I'm going to do
so
it.
So let's get that straight, y'all. But I mean, but I am so appreciative of, you know, my family and my friends. Like, I can't think, you know, that's one thing about me is that I feel bad because I want to be able to reach out to each individual person, tell them thank you.
Yeah.
And I know it's not realistic, but that's just how my mind is set. You know, I don't want nobody to think that I took them, you know, for granted. And again, like I said, I can't thank, you know, you enough, Mimi, even though, you know, I was mad at you on the way over here. And mama too, you can get it too. But I my mind still kind of blank about a lot of stuff, and I know sometimes Mimi don't want to talk about it, you know, because she'll tell me things. I'm like, I don't even remember that, you know, which is, you know, they say you go through something like that or transpire. I don't ever say go through something transpiring in your life like that, you know, it's traumatic on your brain.
Yeah.
And I forget a lot of stuff, you know, but when I had that, when I had the transplant, when they told me that day, that was the day my grandmother, 1 year anniversary of my grandmother passed. Everybody know I was tight with my grandmother Jackie. Mm-hmm. That was like, you know, y'all was in hell on wheels, but that was my grandma. And then the next day, they told me they liked the heart. I'd be in surgery at 2 o'clock in the morning because this particular doctor liked to do surgery at 2 a.m. I was like, all right, whatever, cool. So about 12 o'clock came, the nurse came in. She said, I'm gonna give you a bath, whatever, just in case. I was like, all right, whatever. So I had a habit about listening to my headphones all the time. That's one thing that kept me going. My headphones, man. So the curtain, it's almost like a shower curtain pulled back. I remember it. You can hear it like, shing. And then they open the curtain, all the nurses in the bed. They're like, hey, Daryl. Like, hey. And it's like, you ready? I said, I ain't got no choice, dude. You know, we laughing, whatever. So I was just sitting there, man. It took them the longest to unhook all my stuff, man.
Yeah, it was a lot of machines.
And I was like, yeah. And so they said, come on. I jumped up there, whatever. They took me down the hallway. It started to get cold. Then it get cold. Then it get like, damn, cold. Then it got like, man, what the hell, cold. And then it got, look here, man. Turn some heat on in this mother, cold. Like, stupid cold. And next thing you know, the doors open up like on TV. It opened up. And then you seen the big light on the ceiling. And then you see all the doctors and the nurses all lined up on. There's probably about 15, 16 or so people in the room, seemed like. And they, hey, Daryl, like, hey, y'all. And then I said, come on, Daryl, get on the table. So they pulled me over. I remember every time I get on the table, they had to put extenders on the table for my legs and my arms. I remember that. And then she came over there, and I just told everybody, I said, hey, you know, I want to say thank y'all for helping me, like really helping me. And they was like, man, we got you. Don't even worry about it, D. We got you.
Yeah, your surgeon, normally the heart surgery lasts for 8 hours. Yeah. They say about 8 hours.
Mine was six hours.
You know, a lot of things you don't know, they can't connect your nerves back.
Right, yeah.
Can't connect nerves back. So that was different for us because
I don't have any nerves. I don't have no nerves behind my heart connected because you can't. I can't take Randy's nerves and put them dehint nerves. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You don't get on my nerves, Randy, but I can't do that.
So you feel things a little bit differently.
Yeah.
So my resting heart rate is running probably 100 or 102. Mm-hmm. It's just normal because I don't have any nerves behind my heart. So I got the major things. Like I said, my heart, it was 6 hour surgery, like perfect. And then I woke up, and I remember they said, you know, call for me there. I was like, okay. So I started coughing. They took the tube. I was like, man, I been waiting on that. It must not live. And then that's when the nurse came in, Jane, my nurse James, cool guy from Louisiana, super cool guy. So he asked me and them, my mom and them, did they want to hear my heart?
Yeah, he's able to hear his heart and your heartbeat.
So let me ask, because this is going to be a part one and part two, so we're going to jump into a more. But one question that I want, what do you want people to take away from this? One thing you said earlier, Ms. Denise, about, you know, how the doctors were not just saying, well, not ignoring, but like, right. hey, he's all right. You know, you can send yeah. him home. And you think about how many people went home,
right.
you know. So what would be your message to people that are hearing this when it comes to how they feel or their family feel?
Yeah, I guess with me, I'm just a little bit stronger, a little bit more sterner. You just have to be your advocate. You know, just don't take their word for it because yeah. they don't know all the answers. And that's what, you know, I knew my child. I knew what he looked like. I knew what was going, what he'd been through. I knew we'd been to the emergency room several times. There was no need for us to keep coming back doing this. So I just say, know your strength when you go into an emergency room or to a doctor and they tell you they cannot keep you. Because nowadays, they don't keep you for anything. Mm-hmm. They want to kick you out in a minute.
Yeah.
But I'm just a strong believer. Just speak up. I mean, just say what you feel it. And if it gets you in trouble, get you in trouble. But you don't save your child's life or your loved one's life. But don't allow them just push you off just because, you know, insurance said push you off.
Right.
And like when I told that doctor, you're going to have to, I'm not going nowhere. I know my rights. You know, just know you have rights, you know, to say, no, this is not right. Because if Daryl had went home, let me tell you, and my child died, I would have been back out there looking, waiting for her in the parking lot. Because yeah. she was. Baby! Because she got nasty with me and I got nasty with her.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, yeah. just know your strength and speak up. Just speak
right
up.
And I wonder, even after that, right, mm-hmm. did they have a change in mentality? Because they could have made a critical mistake.
You know? Well, if they did, like I said, that night I stayed up all night trying to keep my child alive. Nobody come in there. Nobody said anything. Nobody acknowledged anything. I didn't say anything. I just did what I supposed to have done for him.
Yeah.
But I just let it go at that point in time. I just wanted Daryl to get some help. You know, because like I said, he's my only child, and I love him, and just it's just the way it is, you know. But just speak up.
Speak up.
Yeah.
Hey, that's part one of Second Chance at Life. We'll be back. Stay tuned for part two, where we'll continue this conversation. Let's sip and chat, two P's, two T's.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.